As a teenager, Robin was a figure skater. In college, she worked as a waiter. Robin's extensive privacy experience isn't brief. She's now Skyflow's privacy chief. And with that, it's my privilege to welcome Robin Andrus to the podcast. She is the chief privacy officer at Skyflow. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, Robin.
Thanks, Noah. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts, and it's definitely interesting to learn more about my peers and what they've done throughout their lives.
Excellent. Okay. Excited to get started here. So as I mentioned in the rhyme, you grew up figure skating. So jump into that a little bit. Already at age 11, you were out there on the ice. So talk about your time figure skating.
Sure. Yeah. It kind of ties in a lot to discipline and really focusing on one area. And also it was one of my first jobs as well, working in an ice rink. So I grew up in upstate New York in the Albany area. And my mom was a teacher, and my sister's birthday was actually in December. So in December in New York, there's like nothing to really do for a birthday party. So she would always take us ice skating for my sister's birthday party. And then, you know, it kind of like I was the one that really took on to wanting to learn how to ice skate. And then it turned into figure skating around age 11, where I really dove in and learned how to, you know, skate forwards and backwards, and then get into all the spinning and the jumping. Began kind of competing on the Northeast kind of national level, and stuck with that until I was, you know, a teenager and went off to college.
Wow, that's fantastic. And do you still ice skate now?
No, I ended up moving to California about 20 years ago, and there's really not many rinks. People do more like outside things like, hey, let's go for a run or a hike. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like it's being inside of a rink is very kind of sterile, and you know, the air is recirculated. So it's something I love, but I feel like I've turned that passion into something else, like running or biking or, you know, working out. Yeah.
Fascinating. Now talk about what did you want to be growing up?
You know, my parents were teachers. So I think when I was little, I might have always thought I would be a teacher at one point. And then I actually went in my mom's classroom when I was in high school or my first year in college, and just realized, like, I don't know if I loved the teaching as much as I thought I would, like the actual being in kind of a second grade classroom. Right. Even though, you know, the kids were adorable, it was a great age, but there just something was missing for me in it. You know, I do think, and then I think when I was older, I actually, in high school, when I was figure skating competitively, I went to physical therapy to deal with some issues in my ankle and my knee from just like repetitive use. And I thought, oh, maybe I want to be a physical therapist. And then I actually did a physical therapy internship at the place I went to in high school. And the first thing that they asked me to do is to kind of measure like the range of motion on this woman's leg. And I was like, I don't want to touch people. So that was quickly my like understanding that like, I don't want to be like a nurse, a masseuse, a physical therapist. Like I just, you know, was like, I just was kind of like grossed out about like touching someone's for medical purposes. So that was a good thing to learn before I kind of went down that path.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's get into your, in college. So you started at SUNY and you ended up transferring to Siena College. So I guess talk about both a little.
Yeah, I am. Like I said, my parents were teachers in upstate New York, and New York State actually has a pretty good state school system called SUNY, State University of New York. You know, they're all over the state. So that was kind of my option, basically. Like, even though I got into some better colleges, my parents were like, you know, we don't want to take on a lot of debt, mm-hmm. Or have you take on a lot of debt. Let's think about kind of a practical approach to school. And I started out, you know, I started actually at a small school called Oswego, which is like north of Syracuse, and it's on a lake. And it looked beautiful. But then when I went there, it was freezing cold. And there was like nothing to do except kind of just party and go to school. So I ended up kind of transferring out of there and going back to the Albany area, which is, you know, the capital of New York. There's a little bit more there. It's not exactly like New York City or DC, but there's more there to do. And also to get a job, like there weren't a lot of jobs in this small town. Like I, you know, needed income while I was in the university. So transferred to Albany, which is, you know, a very well-respected school in a lot of areas. Like they now have kind of a nanotech facility there. Like they have a lot of people go there from medical school. They've got a Albany, New York does have like a pharmacy college, a law school. So it's a pretty, you know, more robust town. And went there. And then I really kind of at some point honed in on like, hey, I really like business. Like I like, you know, how business works, like finance, accounting, like how a company makes money. And the accounting came really easy to me. It didn't come easy to everyone. And then I realized, you know, there's a school called Siena College, which is a small kind of like Catholic liberal arts school, also in the Albany area, but they have a very well-respected accounting program that people would, you know, like Accenture, Arthur Andersen, when they were still around, would recruit out of them, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCoopers. So I transferred over there and it was really like, you know, a great environment to kind of finish my degree in. Like I was the accounting lab tutor. I joined the business fraternity, Delta Sigma Pi, and I was a vice president of professional activities where I would actually like meet with, I would ask like local professionals in the area to come in and kind of talk to us about what they did in the business community.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah, and it seems like even at a young age, you know, what you were figure skating and then accounting, you really jumped into both areas with both feet.
Yeah, and you know, like, hey, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do it right. I'm gonna really learn how to do this. And
Yeah, that's great. Now, talk about to make a little money on the side there, where you were going to school, you were a waitress at a steakhouse. So talk about that.
yeah, I started out, you know, I can't remember, like in college. I mean, high school, I actually worked in the ice rink, so I taught little kids and adults how to ice skate. And I also worked as kind of the person selling the tickets for a while, and then that was more in high school. Then there was a short stint selling knives, actually, the Cutco knives. And then there was also a short stint as a lifeguard, where I just sat there at a pool because it was like a pool at an apartment complex. It was a really boring job. So those were some kind of pre like first year college jobs. And then, you know, I did try retail for a hot second. And just it was hard to just stand around and like fold clothes and be like, oh, that looks really pretty on you. And then, you know, waitressing, I think I like kind of like the hustle and bustle of like being around a lot of people. And so I can't remember how I got my first waitressing gig. I think it was at a seafood place called the Weather Vane. I'm not sure though. But you know, I've somehow got an actual waitressing gig and you know, I really like that because I like the fast-paced nature. Like, you know, you're going to one table to another table, you're putting the order in, you're getting the other order. Like, your 3 to 4 hours of work in an evening would go by fast. Like, people were generally nice to you, like, hey, how are you doing? Some people were kind of not so nice. So, that actually helped you learn really valuable skills that I feel like you could take to your career in the future as an adult. Like, you know, at 20, 21, people not being the nicest to you for no reason or being kind of difficult, like learning how to kind of handle with that adversity.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, get into in college, I think you had one accounting internship. You worked as a regional CPA, so get into that.
Yeah, so as I kind of, you know, was going in my last year of my degree at Siena, you know, wanted to get an accounting internship to kind of see what it was really like to work for a CPA firm. And I got a job at this local regional firm in upstate New York in Albany called Urbach Hacker UHY. It's now called UHY, but it was you know, just kind of started out helping the partners and the CPAs there on different kind of accounting projects and getting my feet wet in the accounting world. And then from there, you know, that was kind of it's actually kind of interesting because, you know, if you're at a big, you're I think it's your fall, like your last fall semester of the university. I don't know if this law schools are like this. I think it's like, you know, you kind of start to get recruited, right? Like, oh, are you gonna go work for a big consulting firm? Are you gonna go work for a big four at the time? It was kind of a big five at the time. So it's like, oh, are you gonna go to work for PricewaterhouseCoopers or KPMG or Arthur Andersen? And I made the decision actually to kind of stay with the regional firm I was at. because, you know, I felt that I would learn more versus being, you know, like one of many. Like, I think it's the same thing in the law world. Like, you know, if you're at a more smaller regional firm, you're going to learn more versus you go to a big firm, you're just scoped out doing like this one thing. So I ended up taking, you know, an offer from this regional firm I was at, and then kind of had a job all ready to go when I graduated from college.
That's great. And so when you graduated, was that a different role than your internship?
Yeah, it was actually, you know, my internship, I was actually an intern. When I started, I was actually, I think they also call it an associate. It's been a while, but I was, you know, an accounting associate. So I have a 4-year degree in accounting, so I could support on things like like audits, like you go in and audit the books of a company or help one of the partners or managers with a tax return while I was studying for and taking the CPA.
Okay, fascinating.
So I think it's a little different in law where like you actually have to have, you kind of pass the bar over the summer, right? Is that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now get into so how long were you there? You were there for a while, and then you ultimately left to work at Deloitte.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because I, you know, started there the summer right after I graduated from college. But before I said, let's do a big trip before I kind of start my career. I traveled in Europe. My sister and I went to Europe because she graduated from the university at the same time. And we did, you know, a trip around Paris, Spain, you know, Italy, Hungary, where my mom was born, Germany, Austria, you know, the whole kind of traditional like Europe kind of loop. And I met some people there, and it was kind of after the first dot-com crash, but they were like, oh, we love San Francisco, you should come visit us. And I'd never really thought about, you know, moving cross country, but you know, I grew up like 2.5 hours north of New York City. New York just felt like a rat race to me. You know, it just felt like you'd be in some tiny little apartment, like you couldn't get out of the city. DC was a little less closer, right? And so was Boston, but those kind of felt like, oh, like if you're from Boston, you'd live in Boston. And DC, I feel like it was very much if you were into politics or from, you know, DC, then you'd live there. But I wasn't really like a big political leaning person. And you know, the West Coast, I was like, oh, like sun, beaches. So what, then what ended up happening is I visited my friends who worked out here and lived in San Francisco. And I loved kind of San Francisco. It has this charm where it really feels like a European city, you know, with like the cobblestone streets and the hills, but you are also on the West Coast. So you have like the Presidio and you can, you know, pretty good weather year round. It's not like a beachy culture as much. Like we're like, I'm gonna go to the beach, like Southern California, but it has a lot of people are really into active sports and being outside. And then also like, hey, let's go have a nice dinner at a nice restaurant.
Interesting.
So it was also during the kind of after the Arthur Anderson Enron issues, where there was a new law being put in place called Sarbanes-Oxley, where kind of the financial controls of an organization had to be audited. And a lot of the big four firms were looking to hire more people anyway. So I ended up, you know, getting an offer from a couple firms in the San Francisco Bay Area saying like they knew I wanted to move specifically out here, and ended up Deloitte hired me and moving out here as a, you know, senior associate in their audit and Sarbanes-Oxley enterprise risk function. So I moved to San Francisco for that job.
Interesting. And talk about, like, you said you were working before for a small regional CPA and then moved to Deloitte, the behemoth. Kind of talk about that transition and different times that you've maybe generally transitioned from big to small to big.
Yeah, I mean, I've had other people ask me that question, like, oh, are you like a small company person? Are you a big company person? And I think a lot of it, you know, like you do have to be able to navigate like a larger organization. And if that, and I feel like that's something you're going to have to do anyway throughout your life, right? Like whether it's a university or it's, you know, just logistics of dealing with a bank or something like that. Deloitte, you know, I had a great experience there. I mean, you know, we were all kind of starting as like the new, I was a little more senior, but I kind of came in with like the new first years. And we were all figuring it out. There's a lot of resources there to kind of help you. You know, I ended up getting put on my major main client was Pacific Gas and Electric Company. So a partner was like, hey, like Robin's got experience. I kind of want her on my job. So I think I kind of locked into a good client early on that I would be with most of the year. Versus like some of my friends could be like on a project for a month and then they had to like go on a different project. And so they didn't know where they were going to be at any given time. So my experience there was really positive, but I think it was also because I got locked into one good client that I stayed on for the majority of the time.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay. And then, so you've stayed in the Cali, you've basically stayed in California ever since. Okay, fascinating. Now, so moving to the next job, you continued on in your accounting financial reporting career at AMB Property.
Yeah, so that's actually now called, it was acquired by a company called Prologis. And so those are the big, when you're driving on the highway, you see the big shipping containers and there's like a globe. That's that company. So as I was leaving Deloitte, you actually get pretty heavily recruited, or you did at the time, out of there by many companies who are looking for accountants to join their CFO function. And I interviewed around. I was trying to figure out what my next role was. I knew some people that had went to this real estate investment, a real estate investment company. And it seemed like a pretty good place to work. So I went there. But then once I got there, I was really bored. Because the role of being in public accounting or consulting, right? Like you're out there, you're learning about a new company, you're in someone else's office, you're kind of learning about their business and what they do. But once you go like in-house, and I haven't noticed this as much in privacy, but that's also maybe because my privacy rules have been like in tech as well. But once you're in-house, my job was like entering numbers into a spreadsheet or a system on like what the budgeting was for a property being built. So can you imagine like, okay, like this is how much the rent is, this is how much the, and then some financial reporting of like pulling together the financial statements for some of the JV funds. So it just kind of felt like a very kind of desk heavy, Excel heavy job. I wasn't really talking to people during the day. It was really just not really very fulfilling. Like, oh, am I going to do this for the rest of my life sort of thing.
Interesting. Get into that a little more as far as why do you feel like that hasn't been the case in your privacy work?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I ended up leaving that job, and then that's when I kind of fell, into privacy. I took a step back and I said, okay, what do I like doing? Right. I was like, do I want to go back to business school? Do I want to go to law school? Like, what is my next step? I seem to have a lot of friends who were either in sales or, I did have some friends who were like employment lawyers, kind of, or accountants. Like, those are my friends. I wasn't like driven by the, desire to sell, like, and get that big quota. Like, I know some people in sales are really like, I want to hit my quota. I want to get this deal. But I really enjoyed working with customers and clients. So working with them on kind of like figuring out their problem and learning about their business and then developing a relationship with them. So that's where I, trustee TrustArc was trustee at the time, was hiring kind of their first, like, I think what now you'd call it privacy solutions manager. And they wanted someone who specifically had kind of worked with like enterprise level clients, right? So these are the larger companies, the people at larger companies. And so then I was hired for that role, and that's where I kind of dived into privacy. And that was different because it was more like interactive. Like I was at a desk all day still in an office, but I was on the phone with people. I was talking to them about their privacy practices and their programs, and helping them put the trustee framework in place, or the COPPA, or the safe harbor. So it was just more interactive versus just being at a desk all day long, like putting numbers into a system.
Interesting. Now, how did you end up kind of falling into privacy? Just get a little bit more into that. Was it like something that you were thinking about before when you left, or how did that job come to be?
I mean, it was 2008. Privacy was not what it is now. It was 15 years ago. And I mean, there's even multiple articles the IAPP has written about, one of the reasons they think there's so many women in privacy is because it was kind of the boring, like back office thing for a while, like risk, like, you know, like, and women were like, oh, I'll take it on. I'll take this on top of my other job. You know, now it's, I think it has, people are much more aware of privacy, you know, with social media and their data being out there. But at the time, it wasn't, you know, like something where people were kind of clamoring to get into. But I mean, no, I mean, for me, it was more about, hey, this seems like a good company. It seems like an interesting role. You know, I felt that it did tie in well with my background of like, you know, audit and risk, because you're also kind of like, it's not about just like selling. It's also, you have to make sure you're kind of doing the right thing for the customer.
Yeah, fascinating. And then get into just, I mean, the timeline there being 2008. It's still pretty early. What kind of clients were you working with then?
Yeah, I mean, most of this is all public on Trustee's website, but you know, they had some large clients like HP, LinkedIn, Oracle, SAP, you know,
Fascinating.
kind of smaller like marketing companies. So I worked with everyone from, you know, the chief privacy officer to legal counsel to someone in IT, someone kind of like CEO starting their own company and being like, I want to have a privacy policy. Can you help me with this?
Well,
It was kind of, you ran the gamut, and then we had a COP, they had a COPPA certification. So then that was, you know, kind of interesting, because you really need to understand like how, making sure they were getting the proper consent as well.
right. Fascinating. Now, okay, so the next job in 2013, you went on to Google as a privacy engineer programmer, program manager there. So get into that opportunity and the work there at Google.
Yeah, so I ended up going over to Google. There was someone that was recruiting for a team there who had come over from internal audit, and I think he kind of liked my background, and they were, you know, hiring people to kind of help manage the internal program around the consent decree, because they had a consent decree back then. So went there for about a year and a half, but you know, I ended up ultimately leaving Google and going over to Yahoo, because I knew the vice president of privacy. He had actually been my client when he was at LinkedIn. And so you know, it was, seemed like a really great opportunity to kind of go and like be part of a small team and like really see how a well-established privacy program was run.
Wow. And what were some of the insights that you picked up there that you were just like, yeah, that's run the right way?
Well, Yahoo at the time, you know, Marissa Meyer was there. They were kind of like reinvigorating the brand. A lot of people have been recruited to go there from, you know, Google and Facebook and other companies. And taking a step back, you know, like Yahoo has had like one of the more mature privacy programs, right? Like they had a chief privacy officer early on. They had policies and practices around privacy like before a lot of these other companies did. You know, there was also a couple people I worked with on the team who were very technical, like very technical kind of engineering and security backgrounds, but they were the sort of the people that would be like in develop, they could be in developer relations. Like they were so good at explaining the technical concepts to people and teaching them. So it was a really supportive, great team. We ended up being part of the legal department. So that was my first time being in a legal department, but everyone was really nice. Everyone was really supportive. We, you know, went through, there was a couple rounds of layoffs, so that's always hard when you know you see your peers be let go. And then we went through, I remember the data breach in 2016 that was disclosed. Disclaimer, you know, I didn't work on it or anything, but I remember seeing it on the news. And then I remember, you know, we were part of the merger with AOL and the acquisition of Verizon. So just, you know, a lot of, and then we merged with the AOL privacy team, which is also kind of a well-established privacy machine. So really interesting experiences across the board there. And then 2017, GDPR.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, so I think right around that time you were working for the IAPP also on the side in as a privacy training faculty, so get into that.
Yeah, so I think it was like 2012, 2013, right? Like the IAPP built a faculty training program, and I think so that's when they were really starting to ramp up on their training. They flew maybe like 30 of us out there actually to New Hampshire to kind of get training on how to train. They provided us with decks, and then you acted as a 1099 contractor, obviously with your employer's permission, to train. my manager at TrustArc, trustee, had, you know, suggested, he kind of nominated me for the role. And it was great because it made me, you know, it kind of forced me to like get up there and do more public speaking, like training 2 days of classes, 8 hours a day, you know, a classroom. Yeah. At that time it was in person. I did do a couple of virtual classes, which were not as enjoyable. Is, you know, it really, you kind of need to like think on your feet and be like, oh, someone might ask you a question or go off tangent on the course. You need to stay on course. And you say, okay, let's put this on the parking lot. But I really, it helped me dive more into the different privacy certifications. Like I'd already passed the CIPP US, or at the time it was the foundation in the US. I'd passed the CIPM at that point as well. And it helped me drill more into the content and teach it to other people. That's so great. I did that for a couple of years as a contractor, but then, you know, once GDPR kind of took off and my day-to-day job got too busy, I, you know, kind of stopped doing that as much. But it's a good experience. I would definitely recommend, if you have the opportunity, to try to do those training courses.
Right. And as you said at the beginning, that your parents were teachers, so you're still able to integrate some of that in your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never thought about it like that, but that's true. Like, you're still teaching.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Fascinating. Okay. So now, as you said, at the end of your time at Yahoo, GDPR came into effect. So I guess talk about that. You've already had been in privacy for a while now, and is, you know, just to talk about sort of, I guess, just more generally, even the development of privacy and what you've seen over the years, but in particular maybe that turning point of the GDPR coming into force.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as privacy professionals, like, we, you know, you were starting to see more momentum, right? Like, you saw Schrems 1, I want to say 2015, 2016, where the safe harbor kind of was invalidated. And then when GDPR, I think I felt that, you know, we were all, everyone was like a little overwhelmed, like, oh, this, you know, 98 articles, right? Like, this huge regulation we need to put in place. What are we going to do? How are other people doing it? How do we interpret the regulation and figure out how to work with the organization to actually put it in place and do it right? So, I mean, from then it's just been, you know, it was kind of slow moving for a while, right? There was GDPR. Now we all have many of us have a pretty good grasp on GDPR if you've implemented it and put it in place in a couple places. And then there was CCPA, and that's kind of all there was for a while, right?
Right.
Like 2018, 2019, maybe CPRA. And then now it's just, you know, it's, you have what, 13 new state laws. We have India's new law, you know, different countries are coming out with different laws. I think that it's, you really kind of have to figure out what is your area of expertise to focus on that you need to within your organization, like whether, you know, that I think it's becoming much more of a, you know, you can be a generalist and understand the privacy laws and the fundamentals, but also like what really impacts your organization.
Yeah. Well said.
Or the law firm, like which area you specialize in.
Uh-huh. And you do a lot of that as in your roles as either privacy engineering, program manager. That's really what you're doing is working on applying all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, making sure you have a good fundamental understanding of what privacy is and why it is important, being that conduit between, you know, an attorney who could be interpreting the law and or even outside counsel who says, hey, this is what we're seeing peers doing in the space. And then also, you know, working very closely with engineers who, you know, show me the data flow. How is the data stored? Like, are you making sure, you know, you're propagating down a deletion request and finding all the data, but except for data that might need to be legally held. So being kind of that, you know, as a privacy leader, like for my team, either working with them and coaching them on it, or, you know, if you're more of an individual contributor role, kind of being that individual working on it directly with the engineers or both too.
Now, so, you know, your background was in accounting and financial reporting, and do you still work with those folks in privacy, or I guess how does that play into your roles now, if at all?
Can't say, you know, the most, like on the risk side, like that's, I think, where the CFO org gets more involved, right? Uh-huh. Like, if you're working with someone in a risk function who's reporting up risks to the CFO, like, what are the privacy risks? How can you quantify them in a way? Budgeting and forecasting as well. So like I've had people come and say, okay, this is, you know, what do you need next year to run your program? How many headcount do you need? What tools would you like to purchase? What's your outside counsel spend? So being able to work, you know, that stuff's really easy for me to figure out and kind of figure out the numbers and the calculations for that and say, like, in order to kind of run my program, this is what we need to, you know, is like continue to run the privacy program at a sufficient level. Or this is what we grow and scale. So having those skills are definitely very valuable.
Great. Now, in 2018, you went on to Twilio as the director of global privacy there. So, talk about that role.
Yeah, in 20, I like to say I had a GDPR baby. So I had a baby girl in May of 2018. So I was the pregnant lady at Yahoo asking all the engineers to do things. And then after maternity leave, I noticed a lot of companies were actually really growing out their privacy programs. Like they had kind of just went through the GDPR craziness to get GDPR into place. They were now looking to, you know, kind of make sure they were properly maintaining that program. And Twilio, what I really liked about them is they had gotten their head of privacy policy, law enforcement, and I think product counseling had went and kind of taken the step of getting BCRs. So for me, I was like, oh, like this is great. You know, you have binding corporate rules, you're going to treat all your data globally around at kind of the GDPR standard level. And she needed someone to come in and run that program and also, you know, run kind of the non-attorney privacy function of the house, right? So came in there and that was, you know, various privacy non-attorney functions, right? So like training, you know, privacy engineering reviews, privacy, you know, things like privacy vendor reviews, but not, you know, my team wasn't negotiating the DPAs. That was, we kind of had an attorney doing that. BCR audit, so it says publicly in their website, on the BCRs, you know, they will have a third party kind of look at their audit, look at their kind of privacy program. So managing that and the process around that. And then there I scaled my team from myself to a team in Ireland and the US, kind of doing all of the different privacy work streams that needed to be done.
Fascinating. Okay, wow. That's great. And then so in 2020, you've been on a couple different boards and advisory boards with the Evident AI and Data Patrol protocol, sorry, and so get into those two roles.
Yeah, I mean, those are just volunteer roles. Those are more kind of volunteer things that I've done. Like my friend, I had a friend who was this company called Evident AI, and they were, you know, they wanted kind of someone who has more privacy expertise, like a privacy advisory board role. So that's where you're kind of
Interesting.
acting, like helping them with questions here and there.
Fascinating.
Data protocol is interesting. They're actually like kind of a engineering training for like an online engineering training course. But they actually make it pretty engineering heavy where you're actually like kind of putting in like more engineering code examples.
Wow.
And so they also kind of like wanted kind of a group of professionals to and privacy to provide feedback on different products and features that they were building. So those are more just things that kind of, I feel like a lot of those things were kind of happening during the pandemic when everyone was fully remote. Like, hey, can you help with this? Can you help with that? You know, so it's just kind of sharing my knowledge out there with others in the space.
That's great. And a couple of years ago, you were got a privacy engineering course from Carnegie Mellon. So talk about that. And I think that was probably your first like education in formal education in privacy, even though you've been doing it for a while now. But get into that.
Yeah, I guess if you don't count the certifications.
Oh, certifications too, right?
No, I mean that was interesting. They have a certificate course, so it was, you know, of like 4 hours a day on Saturdays, I think in the month of February. It's a
Interesting.
really good kind of basic understanding to privacy security, like what is this world of privacy engineering? I think the first couple classes were a little repetitive for me because it's like, this is what privacy is. And then the second one was like, this is what security is. This is how they're different. But then the other classes were more interesting. You know, they really dive into cookie consent and like how, what the note, like Lori Craner at CMU has done a lot of work, right? On like, what is a sufficient cookie consent and really giving that clear consent. They talk about dark patterns, which I was already aware of.
Wow.
And they kind of get like Linden privacy risk modeling and risk score. So it's definitely, you know, I feel like it was a worthwhile endeavor. I don't know if I would, you know, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to do, but it almost like the first two courses for me were a little too repetitive. But I still think, you know, I met some great people. We were all online virtual. And I've kept in touch with some of those people, like our virtual Saturday classes.
Excellent. Okay. So then let's get to where you're at now. You're at Skyflow as their chief privacy officer. So talk about that role.
Yeah. So Skyflow, they're a privacy, a data privacy vault delivered through an API. And they were really looking for someone who really kind of got privacy, who had been in the trenches doing privacy, to come in and lead both their internal privacy program and also kind of externally facing as well. And, you know, the company is really great. It's like, we've got a great leadership team. It's really a product. Like, if you really think about how the data is physically stored beyond, you know, you need to do a DSAR, you need to do a DPIA, you need to have a cookie consent manager, but it's more about how are you physically storing the data? Like, how do you reduce the surface area if there is a breach? And through our technology, you're storing that data in a highly secure manner. Plus also, you know, we have different technologies, privacy enhancing technologies, PETs, where you can redact the data through the governance layer as well. So been here for a couple of years and yeah, just a really great experience. You know, I've spoken at a number of IAPP conferences about the concept of privacy by engineering or really building in privacy from the ground up, from a technological level. Talked to many, you know, CTOs and engineers who are very privacy forward and want to do the right thing around privacy.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, looking forward, what areas and, you know, areas of expertise do you still feel like you have left to accomplish in your career?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be a good podcast these days without talking about AI, right? I mean, I have been, you know, like building off all of my privacy knowledge and kind of building privacy programs and working with teams on privacy. I've been definitely following the AI governance space very closely as well. You know, both for internally here at Skyflow, making sure we're doing the right thing internally, but also kind of thinking about like, hey, I want to get that new AIPP, AIG certification, you know, following what's going on in AI and LLMs and really staying educated and, you know, continuing to mentor peers in the privacy space and, you know, continue to grow my career in privacy, as well as also dive into this AI governance space, which I find interesting as well.
That's great. Now, looking back at your career, what's a moment or two that you feel like you're most proud about?
That's a hard question to ask, I feel like. But, you know, I feel like coming into Twilio and scaling and growing that program there in a pretty fast growing environment, I think is something I'm proud of. There were a lot of moving pieces. And then we went home, you know, halfway through my job there, where everyone just converted to COVID remote. Wow. And then so we were very much in office working together. And then we kind of converted to the, you know, remote first approach. So that's something that, you know, I feel very fortunate to have the experience, and I feel like was a good experience. And then, you know, in a way, I think it takes a lot of courage to also like leave what you're doing and say, like, I'm not going to be this anymore.
Right.
You know, I don't know if lawyers feel like that too, or like a doctor or something, like, hey, I went to school, I'm going to do this. And so, you know, also like, even though I didn't intentionally plan on moving into privacy, like, you know, taking that leap and leaving public accounting and finance and kind of being like, what am I going to do with myself? And then being able to delve and be successful in a new field.
Yeah, well said. Okay. And with that, I'll read the rhyme and we'll sign off. So as a teenager, Robin was a figure skater. In college, he worked as a waiter. Robin's extensive privacy experience isn't brief. She's now Skyflow's privacy chief. And with that, Robin, thank you so much for talking with me on the podcast today.
Thank you. It was great to meet you.
Excellent. Thank you.